This is a production of West Virginia Public Broadcasting.
Support for the legislature today is provided by West Virginia University, offering education, healthcare, and the opportunity to achieve career success since 1867. Information at wvu.edu.
Sonesta Suites in Charleston, an extended stay hotel located near the airport, downtown, and the state capitol. More at sonesta.com.
Solar Hauler, supporting Appalachian communities and building on West Virginia's history of powering the nation by bringing solar energy and battery backup to homeowners, nonprofits, and businesses throughout the region. More at solarhauler.com.
Welcome to the Legislature Today. I'm Curtis Tate. The House of Delegates passed bills today to legalize standing on a moving motorcycle with both feet on its pedals and to allow retired state police officers to assist Child Protective Services in child abuse and neglect cases. Both bills will be sent to the state Senate for further review. Deaf community members of all ages visited Charleston today to talk with lawmakers and resource groups. Jack Walker stopped by and brings us this report.
We're here at the state capitol for Deaf Awareness Day. Community groups and residents from across the state have come out to talk to lawmakers and visitors about current issues affecting the deaf community in West Virginia and resources already available. Advocates like Christine Firkins with the newly established National Center for Deaf Services say that makes disparities affecting the deaf community even more severe, because deaf children and their parents often struggle to access sign language education in a child's early years.
A lot of families that have deaf children don't know what to do, and they tend to just speak and gesture to see if that works. But oftentimes, the children don't respond, and that's the important window for language acquisition between 0 to 5.
The National Center for Deaf Services, or NCDS, helps connect families with educational resources, plus professional development opportunities.
We help them prepare for what they want to do in this future once they graduate high school. If they have a hard time looking for work, we teach them how to be ready for job interviews, resume development, and we try to educate them on how to work with deaf employers as well. Because a lot of companies are a little bit concerned and awkward when they don't want to hire deaf people.
The deaf community has a higher unemployment rate than the hearing community, largely because of difficulties accessing supportive long-term employment. Groups like the NCDS hope to change that.
The NCDS operates across the country. Firkins says the deaf community often experiences mental health needs that can require specialized care. Her group helps residents find that support, too.
Students from the West Virginia School for the Deaf and the Blind also visited the House Chamber for a performance of signing and song.
Groups like the NCDS at the Capitol Wednesday also had the opportunity to speak with the students and discuss the resources they offer. For groups like her own that offer services within West Virginia, Firkin says financial support from the state could also mean supporting deaf residents all around the Mountain State.
For the legislature today, I'm Jack Walker in the Capitol Rotunda.
The Senate passed 7 bills and sent 2 other bills to the governor's desk for consideration. Brianna Heaney has more.
Senate Bill 486 would clarify who is eligible to vote in the state. It further spells out in code who can and cannot vote. Sponsors of the bill say that the Office of the Secretary of State asked for this legislation. Today, the Senate concurred with changes the House of Delegates made to the bill, and it now heads to the governor's desk. Senate Bill 8 would provide additional safe surrender sites for newborns. The bill added places like an EMS building or a police department to places a person can surrender an infant that is less than 30 days old. Today, the Senate concurred with changes the House of Delegates made to the bill, and it now heads to the governor's desk.
Currently, minors between the age of 16 and 18 can get things like birth control or STD testing without their parents' consent or knowledge. This bill, Senate Bill 719, would change that.
Senator Laura Chapman sponsored the bill.
The bill allows a 16-year-old to consent to general medical services for himself or herself as long as the healthcare provider provides actual notice to the minor's parent, except in certain circumstances.
Those certain circumstances are instances in abuse or neglect, or if the minor is married or emancipated from parents. The bill does away with the term mature minor, which is currently used in code. The term essentially refers to a teen who a doctor or nurse practitioner has deemed to be mature enough to make certain medical decisions on their own. Senator Joey Garcia, a Democrat from Marion County, says the bill could have a cooling effect on teens who are seeking health care for things like sexually transmitted diseases or substance abuse.
The reason for that is there are situations in which a minor may not feel comfortable telling their parents about certain things that are very difficult conversations to have. And so right now, my fear is with this bill and requiring either that a minor who a doctor would be able to examine and say this person is mature to make these types of health decisions, or a minor that's 16 to 18 would have to understand that their parents would be notified, and instead of getting the type of treatment that may help them, including treatment that may help them with drug or alcohol issues, which may lead to their death, they're just going to do nothing. Because they don't want to have that conversation. And similarly, for somebody who wants to go and get contraceptive care or take care of something that might be a sexually transmitted disease, you're going to have a situation where a adolescent is not going to get that treatment because they understand their parents are going to be notified about that. And they don't want to have that conversation.
He says that the American Medical Association, the American Academy of Pediatrics, the American Public Health Association, the American Academy of Family Physicians, and the American College of Obstetricians and Gynecologists all oppose this law. Senator Tom Tacubo, a Republican from Kanawha County, worries about a provision in the bill that would take away some teens' current right to have a do not resuscitate order without parental consent. He says in cases where a minor is terminally ill or otherwise has a condition that greatly reduces one's quality of life, they should be able to choose.
They say, hey, listen, if something ever catastrophically happens to me, naturally, that my body fails and my heart stops and God takes me, I don't want CPR done on me. We just took that ability away.
The bill passed 27-6. Both Democrats and 5 Republicans voted no. The bill now heads to the House of Delegates for consideration. For West Virginia Public Broadcasting, I'm Brianna Heaney at the Capitol.
State research predicts more than 21,000 tourism and hospitality job opportunities will open up annually over the next 5 years. Randy Yoey talked with some of the stakeholders in this flourishing field, from students of a culinary kitchen to a community visitor center working to attract tourists to the Mountain State.
The lesson today is a proper flambé at Huntington's Mount West Community and Technical College's Center for Culinary Arts. Hospitality Management and Culinary Program Director Chef Lawrence Perry says the fully equipped kitchens here are working labs that prepare students to prepare dishes at restaurant venues of all sorts.
Whenever a student has completed their time here at Mount West, they are basically plug and play because they've been able to use all that equipment that they will find in commercial restaurants.
First-year culinary arts student Aaron Hall came to Mount West after reading online about the career possibilities for program graduates.
I'm actually going to a program out in Wyoming this summer where the executive chef graduated from this program, so I just saw where it could take me.
Boone County culinary student Cassie Hawks graduates in May. As a high schooler, Hawks interned at the Greenbrier as part of the Culinary Arts WV ProStart program. Through Mount West, she'll go back to the Greenbrier in a few weeks, hopefully to begin her career as a West Virginia chef.
I would like to stay working in West Virginia. I unfortunately feel like some West Virginians don't know what high-class food is, and I would like to bring that to them. But I would also like to keep it Appalachian, you know, down-home cooking, but in a level that they've never seen before.
Chef Perry says his students can go wherever their passions take them, but they're encouraged to make menu choices come alive in the Mountain State.
We have so many opportunities across the state. We have state parks, we have hotels, there's resorts. There are a lot of places that are needing qualified, educated people that can be plugged right into existing positions.
Nestled between a locomotive from the time of railroad magnate Collis B. Huntington and a former bank building that was maybe robbed by Jesse James, the Huntington Convention and Visitors Bureau works to put visitors into local restaurant seats. CVB Director Tyson Compton says his job is all about economic development.
To let people know what you have to offer as far as restaurants, attractions, meeting space, then draw them into your community so that they will hopefully stay all night and then spend money in the community while they're there.
House Bill 2009 abolishes the Department of Arts, Culture, and History, which West Virginia Public Broadcasting is a part of, and puts all those functions underneath the Department of Tourism. Now, that bill has passed the House of Delegates and is currently in the Senate Government Organization Committee. Now, the philosophy of many with the West Virginia tourism and hospitality industry is to let those delegates and senators that are making those funding decisions know that they're going to get a return on their investment.
I think the legislature really is focused on making sure that the return on investment in culinary arts and in the hospitality management program can really do its job. And to do that, they need to have qualified individuals.
I think our legislators are really understanding that in recent years, because there is a big return on that investment. You know, for every dollar spent, depending on the market, but for every dollar spent on advertising, that can come back as $4 to $6 being spent in your community.
Governor Morrissey touts tourism and the hospitality industry as a major economic driver. And oh, that flambé you saw on the stove became a mushroom and crostini dish that would punctuate just about any West Virginia palate, including mine. For the Legislature Today, I'm Randy Yowie in Huntington.
Is it good?
Really good.
The chairman of the Senate Energy, Industry, and Mining Committee says he'll seek to recuse himself from a bill opposed by his employer, Mon Power. Senator Chris Rose, a Monongalia County Republican, will ask Senate President Randy Smith to recuse himself from Senate Bill 505. The Energy Committee approved the bill last week, and Rose is one of its co-sponsors. Rose is an engineer from Mon Power, which operates a coal-burning power plant in Monongalia County and another one in Harrison County. At the Capitol Wednesday, Rose said he'd seek a Rule 43 ruling from Smith.
So yeah, I'm going to ask for Senate Rule 43, but that'll ultimately be up to the Senate President to make a determination. If he grants it to me, I'll be recused, and if not, I will be required to vote.
Rose also commented on Mon Power's opposition to the bill.
Well, of course, a lot of electric utilities are going to oppose that bill. But what it is a pay-for-what-you-get mechanism. So essentially right now, what we're seeing here in West Virginia is we're seeing these coal-fired power plants are being paid not to run, but they're buying power off of the grid. And there's some studies proving that the ratepayers are actually the ones eating that cost. And all this bill does is it will add a formula into it to where you pay for what you get. You could choose not to run those plants and pay and buy from the grid, but you're not going to be able to pass the cost of not running the plant to the customer.
The West Virginia Government Ethics Act requires lawmakers to avoid conflicts of interest and seek recusal, though they may not be excused from voting in every instance. Depending on how Smith rules, Rose could still be required to vote on the bill. SB 505 is now in the Government Organization Committee. Regardless of other bills passed by the legislature, the only thing delegates and senators are constitutionally required to do is pass a balanced state budget. A decade ago, this would often stretch into extended sessions, even going as far as June before the final budget was agreed to. In recent years, the budget has been completed within the 60-day session. Earlier today, Eric Douglas sat down with Senator Jason Barrett, a Berkeley County Republican and chairman of the Senate Finance Committee, and Delegate Clay Riley, a Harrison County Republican and vice chairman of the House Finance Committee, to get their take on the budget process so far.
Welcome to the legislature today, gentlemen. I appreciate you taking time out of your busy day. I've got Senator Jason Barrett from Berkeley County and Senator Clay Riley from Harrison County.
Delegate Clay Riley, but Delegate, it's close enough.
I'm sorry. I knew I was going to get that, but thank you. It's I appreciate fine. That. Chairman of the Senate Finance Committee, Vice Chairman of the House Finance Committee. And that's what we're here to talk about today is the state's finances, the state's budget. I guess I'll just kick it off with, just as session was beginning, the governor came out and said that there's a $400 million hole in the budget. I've heard Delegate Chris and a couple others say, no, that's not. So tell us, is there a $400 million shortfall in the budget? Whichever one of you wants to take that.
Well, I think it's important to note that the governor has presented to the legislature a balanced budget. So the budget that he presented has no gap whatsoever. I think what the governor has talked about is presenting the budget in a different way than it has been in the past, and different than what the legislature is used to. And that doesn't make it right or wrong. I think it's just different. And there's been some spending that the legislature has done over the past couple of years, either through supplemental appropriations or through surplus section. And I think what the current governor was looking to do is put all those things in the general revenue section of the budget. We do have a couple of issues that are driving some of our tight budget year, the PIA contribution, as well as the expansion of the HOPE scholarship. So I think those are the things kind of driving it. But again, I'll come back to the governor has presented us a balanced budget. We will give him back a balanced budget by April 12th.
What?
You know, I'd echo the senator's sentiments as well. It's all how you look at its perspective. It's how you look at what those, whether they're one-time supplementals or whether the one-time spends or whether they were base bills. And as a new governor comes in, they take a look at what's been spent over the past couple of years, and sometimes not having the backstory of knowing that it was a three-year commitment. For example, the nursing fund, which was 3 years of $17 million that was included in as a future potential liability, but we were done with that. So okay. I think it's a perspective of how you look at it. But it is, and I echo what the senator says, it's a balanced budget and the governor will get a balanced budget back.
I've heard the phrase front of the budget versus back of the budget. I always kind of understood the back of the budget is the things that we like to fund but don't necessarily have to fund to operate the government. Is that?
I think that's a kind of a safe definition.
So the
front of the budget is the general revenue section, kind of those base building things that you anticipate to spend every year are typically in the general revenue or the front of the budget. The back of the budget being the surplus section where there would be a lot of one-time spends, investments, or things that maybe you have to spend once or twice over a couple of years. The way the nursing program that the delegate talked about, those things, or things that, like you said, maybe you want to fund, but you don't necessarily have, you don't know that you're going to have the money for, but aren't base spending.
You know, one of the things I would mention that's been in the back of the budget a couple of the years, that the past few years, this Republican-led legislature has really focused on investing in water and sewer infrastructure, roads. And so you saw a $50 million allocation in the back of the budget that said if our economy grows and we have those funds, it is a priority of this legislature to invest back in the infrastructure. And I think you've seen that, and I think hopefully you will continue to see those investments.
So where do we stand on the process? I know you've both been going through budget hearings. Are those done now? Are we hammering out details?
So from the House side, we have finished our budget hearings. So we finished up last week. I think the Senate may have one or two more left. And those are very important. I mean, I don't want to overlook those. You really get an idea of what the priorities of the executive branch is and the agencies, what their needs are. And so it's really important as the House Finance and the Senate Finance prepare their budget that they have that perspective. So we are done. We're moving legislation at this point, and we're working through the agencies to see where the priorities of the House will be, at least on our side.
We do have two budget hearings left, so we're going to have those tomorrow at 3:00. We have both the Department of Health and the Department of Human Services. We've had to reschedule them. We've asked for additional information to give the necessary information to the committee so that when we put the Senate's budget together, that we're able to appropriately fund both of those agencies. So they're a huge agency, especially the Department of Human Services. We have a lot of questions, and we just want to make sure that I want to make sure that I provided the committee members with the appropriate information. So as Delegate Riley said, we are at the point now where we are running legislation, and we have been working on the budget, getting it ready. It is the House's turn this year to pass their budget first. So we look forward to seeing what they give to us, and we'll. I have served in the House of Delegates for a number of years on the Finance Committee. I served on that committee with both Delegate Riley and Chairman Chris. A good working relationship with them. So you know we're looking forward to the negotiations as that time comes.
Now, for many years up until the last administration, but there was always a few extra days to get the budget done. The last 5-6 years that I can remember, we've had the budget done by day 60. You both said you will have the governor will have a balanced budget by April 12th. And you're confident of that? Or?
I believe so. I mean, I, as Senator Barrett said, we have a really good working relationship. We can agree, we can disagree, we can hash it out. And we both represent our caucuses and what really needs in the House. You know, we'll represent the House, Senator Barrett represent the Senate, and we each have priorities. And it has been, at least I've been here 4 years, this is my fifth, we've been able to get it out on time because I think it is important. We have a job to do, and I think it's been at least the House Finance Committee that I've served on. That's the charge that we've taken.
Yeah, I fully anticipate to get it done by April 12th, and you're right. And in years past, that it had been a budget week, where there'd be several days after that, after the end of the session, to work the budget out. The past several years under Republican-led legislature, it's been a priority to get it out by day 60, and I think we're going to continue to honor that priority.
So I know a discussion has been about long-term projections. The previous administration didn't offer those, but I understand Governor Morrissey is preparing those as well. Where does the state stand over the next 5-6 years? What are you guys seeing?
Well, and I appreciate the governor getting back to the six-year plan. That is something that many of us had asked the previous governor year after year to provide us a six-year plan. The six-year plan that's been put out by the budget office and by the governor indicates that there are some significant budget shortfalls in the out years. And that's under the premise that we're not going to pass any legislation or tackle some of the big challenges that we may have. So you know, it's a guide to use to understand where you will be if you do nothing. But that's not what this legislature is about. We're about taking on big projects, big problems, solving them, and I fully anticipate, as we're constitutionally mandated, to have balanced budgets every year without significant cuts that hurt the people of West Virginia.
You know, state government's a battleship, not a speedboat, so you
right.
can't turn on a dime. I really appreciate the governor putting that forth. If you start to look in the out years, as we've had the roads to prosperity, those bonds begin to increase in the out years. So it's allowing us to plan for that and say we really have to do things to generate additional economic development. We have to have cost controls. We really have to pay attention to certain aspects of the budget. So I appreciate him putting it out there. And I think it just allows us to do a better job.
Any pitfalls you see coming, though, or you know, you both kind of mentioned that some of the further out years that looking like there may be some problems. Is that because of the tax cuts or?
No, I wouldn't put it because of the tax cuts at all. I think when you've looked at what liabilities are out there from whether it's Roads to Prosperities or future bond indebtedness, you also have to anticipate some economic growth. And so our economy has grown over the past 20 years at a rate of about 2.5%. So it allows you to go ahead and look at some of that long-term forecast and say, all right, well, we see some growth maybe in the Medicaid program, whether it's an expansion service, what it might be. It's just you have to pay attention to that and be able to plan for it.
Yeah, and I look at the six-year plan as a conservative estimate, and I give the governor's office credit for being conservative in that. But I think, under the Trump economy here, that I think that our growth will exceed what some of those six-year projections actually are.
Okay, fair enough. So, obviously, the national news has been dominated quite a lot with cuts to the federal budget, cuts to the federal government. There's concerns, what's that mean for our education programs, Medicare, Medicaid, those sorts of things. Any concerns from you gentlemen? What are we kind of backfilling any of that right now, or are we just watching for now?
Well, I think not to speak for the Senate, but I know we both have been really paying attention to what's going on in the federal. We can't control the federal budget and the changes they're going to make, but we can talk about contingencies and how you look at things and if certain items happen. So I think it's from a planning perspective to pay attention to it. I know we talk regularly about what might occur, but at this point, you have to plan for it, but no action is really necessary.
Yeah, I would agree. I mean, we're certainly mindful of what is going on in Washington. I think President Trump has recently said that there will be no cuts to Social Security, Medicare, or Medicaid. That's important to West Virginia, obviously. We have a job to do here in the West Virginia legislature. We're going to do that job. And as the delegate said, if there are some changes that come out of Washington, we'll have to be ready and prepared for them as they come.
As we wrap up, we just got a minute or two left, but I recall over the last few years there's been anticipated expenses for the jails, for foster care. You know, there's a number of things that we the state really needs to spend money on. Are those going to make it into the budget this year? Are we portions of it?
I think you've seen us address those. I think you've seen us continue to put money in behind those, and I think you'll continue to see that. I know, you know, when the economy is good, you maybe dollars grow in some budgets, and I think we've the House side and I know the Senate side has really looked to see where are some of maybe those dollars that are still laying around that we can increase, you know, maybe it's the public defenders or the guardian ad litem. So there's a bill in House Finance right now where we're trying to address some of that issue. So I think we are dealing with these issues. They're hard, complicated issues, and they take time.
Yeah, these issues are about priorities, and it's a tighter budget year than we've had in the past couple of years. But whether it's foster care or programs like that that are important to West Virginians, especially the children of West Virginia, I think those things will be prioritized in our budget so that we are able to take care of the foster children and our most vulnerable across West Virginia.
Gentlemen, I appreciate your time. Thank you for coming on today, and good luck to you the rest of the session.
Thank you. Appreciate it.
That was Senator Jason Barrett and Delegate Clay Riley speaking with Eric Douglas about the state budget process so far. That's it for tonight. Thank you for joining us. Catch the legislature today, Monday through Friday at 6 p.m. And remember, West Virginia Public Broadcasting covers the session daily in our radio news program, West Virginia Morning, and on our news site at wvpublic.org. We also broadcast the daily floor sessions of both the House and the Senate on the West Virginia Channel. I'm Curtis Tate. Good evening, and see you here again tomorrow.
Support for the legislature today is provided by West Virginia University, offering education, healthcare, and the opportunity to achieve career success since 1867. Information at wvu.edu.
Sonesta Suites in Charleston, an extended stay hotel located near the airport, downtown, and the state capitol. More at sonesta.com.
Solar Hauler, supporting Appalachian communities and building on West Virginia's history of powering the nation by bringing solar energy and battery backup to homeowners, nonprofits, and businesses throughout the region. More at solarhauler.com.